This is The Cutting Room Floor, with your hosts, Eric and Alex. The Cutting Room Floor features discussions that contain spoilers. Listener discretion is advised.
Evolution has programmed our fabulous male brains to take anything anybody else thinks is important and make it bigger. Have you seen my new 301-inch TV?
Hypnotoad is brought to you by the Magnaphalix 302-inch TV. It's bigger!
Oh, hell!
Hi, welcome back to The Cutting Room Floor. I'm Alex.
And I'm Eric.
And we are going to talk about fanboy adaptations. If we were to get a chance to make a movie, like, what would we want to see? How would we want to do it? So the premise of this is, when you're a fan of something, you tend to be passionate about it. I mean, really passionate. This is particularly true for fandoms that are adapted to the screen, big or small, whether it's a book, comic book, video game, whatever else. You want it to be good. And odds are, you probably have some strong opinions about how it should be done. And so most of us will never get the chance to make our own big screen or big budget movies, but what if we did? So we're going to talk about what we would like to see.
The first on my list is actually, so we're in Utah, and it is a trilogy of books by a local Utah author, a very famous fantasy author named Brandon Sanderson. And the trilogy is called the Mistborn Trilogy. Basically, your typical setting is you got basically your like kind of Victorian era styled setting with aristocrats, and you got a lesser an underclass that's been oppressed by the nobles and stuff. They're in slavery and stuff, and you also have these people who have magical abilities. Okay. Where they use it through alchemy, where they ingest flakes of various types of metal.
Okay.
And each metal gives them a certain ability.
Okay.
And then there are people called Mistborns who are basically able to use all of these metals, as opposed to, you know, normally one person is allowed, okay, I can use, for example, bronze.
Okay.
But then you've got other people who are called Mistborns who are able to use any metal they want.
Okay.
They're
cool.
Kind of like a super magic user person.
Okay.
The best way to describe this is, it's kind of cool. You know how most stories are like, okay, we got to defeat the big bad.
Right.
Who has been in power. That's sort of like this, except for the fact that the bad guy, the book starts out with the bad guy already, he's already won, and he has been in rule. He has been in rule for 1,000 years because he's basically an immortal.
Okay, cool.
And it's basically, it starts, the first book is basically about just this small little thieving crew. And they are trying to, you know, scam people and stuff. But the leader's ultimate goal is to kill this immortal emperor who has basically become a almost god to his subjects.
Okay.
A tyrant god.
Yeah. Cool. Right.
But yeah, it's just, it's such a unique setting and such a unique magic system that the author has created, and he's thought about it a lot. He's made it very grounded and okay, here are the rules, here's how this magic works. It's one of those epic fantasy series that I'm like, this could be like the next Lord of the Rings.
Right.
If it's done properly.
Right.
And like, it's just, I mean, okay, spoilers for anyone who has never read this series and or wants to. At the end of the first book, they kill this evil, immortal emperor guy.
Okay.
And the next two books in the series are what happens afterwards.
Okay.
Like, there's a power play in the government and stuff. Well, this is major spoilers, but basically it's like, let's say, for example, that this evil, immortal guy is Emperor Palpatine.
Okay.
And it turns out that after Emperor Palpatine has been killed off, he was a tyrant, he was a horrible, evil person, but he was trying to keep the Dark Lord Sauron at bay. That's basically what happens in this series. They end up accidentally releasing this evil God.
They basically released something worse.
Yeah, they released something worse. Like, okay. Oh yeah, this guy kept a horrible, you know, 1,000-year rule. But then afterwards, they're like, oh crap, was like, did we do the right thing by killing this guy? Yeah. So it just that's an interesting twist.
Yeah, that it totally is.
You know, it's like, and yeah, just you got this. You got great, compelling characters, okay. And just the author is very good at painting pictures with words.
Okay.
This same author has basically done basically a comic book equivalent of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, mm-hmm. in his book universe.
Oh, okay.
All of the series stand more or less on their own, but I think eventually he does little hints and nods like, oh, hey, there's this object in this one book series that if you've read this other book, whoa, mind blown.
Right.
You know? But I think eventually he might do some type of Avengers-style team-up. But as far as seeing eventual film adaptations, there is a film company that actually has bought the rights to this universe that this author has created.
That's pretty cool.
So they could, like, make an adaptation of this particular trilogy or any of other works this author has done.
So, like, they have, so there's this particular trilogy, and then he's got other books, but they all take place in the same universe.
Yeah, they take place in different solar systems.
Oh, okay. Different planets.
Planets, and, like, you have, like, various, like, gods on, like, each world has, like, a different set of gods. Like, if the Mistborn one, you have the god of good, which is called preservation, and you have the god of evil, which is ruin.
Okay.
And then in this other book series, there's a completely different god by some other name, and
gotcha.
Yeah, it's cool. At the same time, it's kind of a little bit like, well, maybe I don't want to read this other series that he's done about superheroes.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's like, I don't want to have to be like the MCU. I don't want to be like, well, if you want to know what about this, then you need to have read this 4 other books. Like, which a lot of people who have read his books have said, that's the beauty, is he keeps his series self-contained.
Right.
So you don't have to go and read another series, but yeah.
That's cool, though.
Yeah, it's cool. It's pretty cool and definitely unique.
Well, anybody who listens to this show knows how much the two of us love Batman. Kind of absurd. But for me, like, I grew up on Batman. Like, I watched reruns of the 60s cartoon. I think that was, like, my first, like, introduction to the character.
Hang on, old chum.
Right. Shucks, Batman. And then, obviously, the animated series.
Yeah.
As a kid, I loved the 89 Batman. I think I, like, wore out my neighbor's VHS, like, because they had it and I didn't. So they let me borrow, like, older couple, you know?
Uh-huh.
I don't know why they had it, but they let me borrow it whenever I wanted, and I watched that thing to death. And, like, the Dark Knight trilogy is about as close to perfection as it gets, I think, as far as Batman goes. The thing that is, I think, so unique about Batman is that, like, I mean, not only is he a great character, but he's got, like, the best rogues gallery in comics.
Yeah.
I mean, the X-Men have Magneto, you know, and Spider-Man has the Green Goblin, and, you know, Wolverine on his own has
Sabretooth,
you know. So I think, like, each hero has, like, one villain in particular, you know, that you can associate with them.
Uh-huh.
But Batman's got, I mean, he's got the Joker, Riddler, Bane, Two-Face, Catwoman.
Scarecrow,
yeah. I mean, all of these different characters that, I mean, granted, you know, most anybody will argue that, like, the Joker is, like, the greatest of them all.
Uh-huh.
But it's, like, going from the A-plus level down to, like, the A level, you know?
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, the Green Goblin and then you've got Mysterio. You know, who cares, you know? I mean, I think he could be a cool villain, but, you know, it's like, with a lot of heroes, you go from, like, A-list to, like, C-level, you know? And so Batman's just got so many that are just that upper tier that you just have, like, the greatest well of characters in that family, you know?
What about Calendar Man and Condiment King?
So that's where we're going, though, not Condiment King.
You're going with the Calendar Man, though.
But, like, no, not with Calendar Man, but what I would like to see is, like, an Arkhamverse adaptation.
Where one of the best video game trilogies ever made. They finally got a good
Batman video game.
Right. But not only that,
and,
like,
and comic, yeah.
Right. But not only that, like, you have, like, a villain like the Calendar Man, where, like, when you see him, he looks threatening. I mean, he's got, like, the months, like, tattooed around his head, and he's got, like, these nasty scars, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just, like, that dude, like, I mean, yeah, he's not Joker level, but I wouldn't want to run into him in an alley, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, the Arkham games, which is, so that we're talking Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, Arkham Knight, and then Arkham Origins.
Mm-hmm.
They basically succeeded in taking the characters in Batman's world and adapting them, throwing out enough changes that the characters are unique versions
mm-hmm.
of what you would consider the mainstream, but they're not so different that they're unrecognizable.
Yeah.
They feel like they're familiar, just like you've gone down a little bit of a different road, and so they're just slightly different. So, like, Penguin is still a conniving mob boss, but he's a lot rougher, and he's got that glass bottle shoved into his eye socket, you know?
Yeah.
It's horrifying. You've got the Joker, who was voiced by Mark Hamill, who did the voice of the character in the classic animated series, but, like, the dial's, like, cranked to 11, you yeah. know? Then you've got, like, Harley Quinn, Catwoman, Poison Ivy, and, the sex appeal factor has been dialed up a notch or two
yes,
or
it
10,
has.
But the characters' personalities aren't, like, wildly different, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they so even though like their visual aesthetic is more mature, it's not ever pushed to the point where it's obscene or like the characters become like mockeries of what they were.
Uh-huh.
So it's just they've just changed them enough to where they're a little bit different. So the same goes for Batman. Like he's rougher. Like he's voiced in the games by Kevin Conroy. And so you kind of, like with Mark Hamill, you kind of get, like, the feeling it's kind of like the animated series version, but he's gruffer.
Oh, yes.
Like, he'll break your leg and then threaten to do the same thing to the other one if you don't tell him what he needs to know to get to whatever task you need to accomplish, you know? He's going to send you to the hospital, but he's not going to kill you. You know,
mm-hmm.
he's different in that sense, but he's the same.
Because that's what Batman does.
Right, yeah.
He maims people. He does not kill them.
I mean, as far as this goes, I wouldn't want to see, like, an adaptation of Arkham Asylum or Arkham City is kind of where it turns that universe on its head and really turns it into something different.
Yeah.
Seeing, like, Batman stuck in Arkham Asylum for, like, one night would actually be kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't necessarily want to see, like, a direct adaptation of one of those. Just, I would want to see something along the lines of that style and aesthetic where the characters are able to be adapted, but the focus is on the storytelling. And I think that could be translated into film. That kind of, because the stories, at least, I didn't play Knight
mm-hmm.
because I heard it was, like, really focused on the Batmobile and kind of a different
it was.
Thing.
It was focused more on the Batmobile because
yeah.
it was the new gadget.
Right. But, like, those...
But overall, I thought the story of it was decent.
Right. I mean, I know what happens in the story.
Yeah.
So, like, the story itself, I think, is in line with the first two games. And Origins, I thought, was pretty good.
Yeah.
If you can get that kind of storytelling where you're able to weave these characters in, and I mean, you have all these different characters, they're completely different versions of the characters introduced in this game. It's kind of like the problem with, like, starting off with a Justice League film, but they pulled it off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So if they could do that, I'd be happy. So
nice.
Cool. One other thing I wanted to say was, since we're talking fanboy isms right here, if I could cast anybody living or dead in a Batman role, I would put Audrey Hepburn in her prime as Catwoman.
Nice.
So, have you ever seen the Adam Hughes comic covers?
No, I have not.
He basically based Selina's facial features off of
Audrey
Hepburn.
Oh, nice.
And it's amazing. It's so cool looking. And I would just dare anybody to look at her as Holly Golightly in Breakfast at Tiffany's and tell me she couldn't be Catwoman. just visually, she's spot on. Like, she could be her doppelganger. So, I think that'd be cool. So,
I'm sure Eartha Kitt would have something to say about that.
Eartha Kitt's fine.
But yes, no, that would be cool.
Yeah, that's like my fan casting right there. Uh-huh. Audrey Hepburn as Selina Kyle.
I would like to see a proper, focusing on the word proper, Avatar The Last Airbender adaptation. Right. I believe, yes, I know it's a children's show. Yes, I know it's a... When I walked out of that film, I was like, that movie should have been, if not Lord of the Rings length,
right,
like almost close to that, like right, almost like a 3 hour, 2.5.
How long was it?
1 hour and 43 minutes.
I mean, just knowing what you said about it, basically they took a whole season and tried to put it into one movie.
Yep.
And that's counting credits, right?
I think so, yes.
So probably take away 10 minutes, so probably about 90 minutes.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, like, it's just, it's a great, like, fantasy mixed with, like, Eastern influence, like, mm-hmm, martial arts, and, like, it's just a fun show.
Right.
And it would make an awesome... It would make an awesome movie. Right. An awesome trilogy, I think.
Yeah. You just gotta do it right.
Yeah, you just gotta do it right.
Yeah. Cool. Any other particular changes you would make other than just doing competent work?
better casting.
Yeah, so that was one of the things I meant to bring up in the last episode, was it? Didn't they kind of whitewash the cast?
Yes.
To some degree?
Yes, to some degree they did whitewash the cast. So there was that.
Right. Because there's all supposed to be... it doesn't take place on, like, Earth, does it?
No, it does not take place on Earth. But, like, basically, you have the waterbenders. They are based off of Inuit people. The airbenders are, like, straight-up Shaolin monks.
Okay.
Like, their colors are orange and yellow.
Right.
And then you've got the Earthbenders and the Earth Kingdom. They're really based off of that's the thing. Firebenders are definitely, like, their architecture is, like, straight Japanese.
Okay.
And, I mean, it's an American cartoon, but they drew it like it was a Japanese anime.
Oh, okay. Well, and if you're basing it around certain cultural groups,
mm-hmm,
and the style is imitating certain groups,
mm-hmm,
then when you cast it,
yeah,
you should go along those lines. It'd be like making a movie that's based around Pakistani culture, and all the characters in every description of the book are Pakistani, and then when you watch the movie, they're all white. It's like, why?
Why would
you do that?
Yeah, I think to an extent he sort of did that.
Okay.
Like, he made, instead of making the Fire Nation be all,
like, monks?
Japanese,
oh, right,
like,
right,
feudal Japan type stuff, he based them Indian.
Okay.
And I believe, like, the Earth Nation was more, like, Taiwan or Chinese or whatever, you know, like. And then, of course, you got the two main leads, who are as white can be.
Well, and that was the problem, I think, was yeah. I mean, I'm imagining they kind of looked out of place with the rest of...
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, they
why?
Did. They did. And it's just like, doesn't make sense.
Right. I don't know. I just think if you can find somebody that's going to match the rest of the group,
mm-hmm,
you can find somebody with the acting chops. Like, come on.
Yeah. So I think, obviously the acting chops, and I think going with the whole competency thing, there's a part in the movie where they get... there's a bunch of earthbenders who are captured and imprisoned by the Fire Nation. In the cartoon, they're on an oil rig surrounded by metal. There is no earth anywhere.
Right.
In the movie, they're in a canyon, for crying out loud. And it's like, oh no, we can't use our powers, otherwise they'll hurt our families, blah, blah. I'm like, you have earth underneath your feet,
right,
people. And then there's just, like, other... One of my favorite things I noticed is, like, you know, I watched an internet reviewer basically say, like, let's see what, you know, five earthbenders can do in the cartoon. And they're, like, columns of stone being thrown at people. And it's like, now let's see what the movie does. You got five extras being like, what? And they do a, they lift one rock, CGI rock, and slowly throw it. And it's like, you've got to be kidding me. Right. What underpowered, like, I know it probably cost you a lot of money to make that rock float.
Right.
But. My goodness.
That's not like a small budget movie either.
No, it was not a small budget movie. I don't know. It's just, yeah. So better casting and take your time on the development of the story.
Right.
And just, yeah. Obviously, they'd have to cut some corners.
Right.
For time.
And right.
Just, oh, well, this was a filler episode on the show. Let's
right.
Not...
Yeah, you don't have to do anything with that.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But, yeah. So, yeah. Just, and better act. Just better acting. It's and die better script. Not have... Things like, we were forced under the water of the ocean.
Wow.
Terrible.
That is awful.
Yeah, it's bad.
From day one of Disney and Lucasfilm announcing they were developing spin-off stories, separate from the main episodic saga films of the Star Wars movies, of the Star Wars universe, I've wanted an Obi-Wan solo film, set between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. I don't know, it just seems cool. Like, you've got Ewan McGregor, who is the right age right now to do it. I think it's going to happen. They just need to make the freaking announcement.
Yeah, yeah.
And I held off on doing this before. I'm like, I got to think of a backup just in case they announce it. Just in case they say it's going to happen.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I think that it would just be a really cool thing to see. Because he was, especially when you get into episodes 2 and 3, he's the rock of the... You know
that trilogy.
Yeah, I mean, he stands heads and shoulders above. I mean, maybe not above Christopher Lee, because that guy could read the phone book and make it sound good, you know. But I mean, Ian McDiarmid is fantastic as Palpatine.
Oh, yes.
But when you at least look on the light side of the Force, you know, Ewan McGregor stands out above
Hayden Christensen.
Everybody else, practically.
Mm-hmm.
Real or CGI,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I think that it would be really cool to give him, like, a proper, just Obi-Wan-centric movie.
Yeah.
People have talked about, this isn't, like, a lone idea that I've had. This has been bouncing around with other people, too, and there's been, like, ideas of, like, a one last mission where he goes, like, off-planet. I actually think it would be kind of cool to keep him, like,
on Tatooine.
Yeah, like... I think it'd be more compelling if, like, trouble found him. And not, like, in the sense of, like, Jedi hunters come, but, like, just something happens. And whatever that threat is, it's gotta pose, or whatever that is, it's gotta pose a threat to the Lars homestead.
Uh-huh.
Because that's gonna, I think, with anything else, he would be willing to just be like, I gotta keep my cover. But if it's something that threatens Luke...
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the impetus for him to be like, I've got to get involved.
Yeah.
So I think that that would be cool, but I also think it would be cool to see him be like, it's kind of funny going back to like the Arkham games.
Mm-hmm.
There's the stuff where you're doing huge brawls, but a huge part of those games is like the stealth.
Oh yeah.
Where you have to get through things without being seen. It would be kind of cool to see Obi-Wan in that same situation where it's like, he can't attract attention to himself. So... Whatever, if it's some kind of cartel or whatever it might be, he's got to subvert them, like, on the lowest key possible.
Without whipping out his lightsaber
right.
at all.
And I mean, you know that he's going to do that at some point, but it's got to get to the point where it's like, that's the only answer.
Uh-huh.
And basically at that, like, I was thinking it would kind of be cool to see him on, like, the other side of that. Because, like, we see that with Vader in the comics. Somebody, like... There was a story recently where they're tracking down a Jedi. It's the librarian.
Okay, yeah.
And she basically deduces that he's Anakin Skywalker.
Okay.
And at that point, there's a bunch of clone troopers on the transport ship. And the next panel you see is they're all flying out the windows. Because Vader can't let anybody know who he was. He kills them all, you know. I think it'd be cool to see Obi-Wan in that same situation where it's like he busts out the lightsaber so people know there's a Jedi on Tatooine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no witnesses, no survivors.
So and he goes dark side?
Or? No, not dark side.
But
I
just to keep his cover.
It would be to keep the cover because he knows that he's the only thing that's there to protect Luke.
Yeah.
And so I don't think he would be happy about it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be one of those things where, like, he's enjoying it, but it's, like, it's kind of the idea of...
For the greater good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it would be, like, a bad situation for him to be in. But it's just, like, nope, Luke is the priority, and so if that means I've got to kill 50 guys, mm-hmm. that means I've got to kill 50 guys, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I just think that would be really cool.
Yeah.
And I think, like we've mentioned before, you know, people have talked about, like, him having another confrontation with Vader. I don't want that, because that would undermine A New Hope.
Yeah.
But, like I've mentioned before, I think part of his struggle would be recognizing his failure with Anakin.
Uh-huh.
And in, like, dreams or visions, having him...
Duel with
him. Yeah, where, like, you know, he hits Vader in the face and he takes off the mask and it's Anakin under there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of see that anguish, you know, and whatnot. I think it'd be an interesting way to incorporate that, because he's, I think, at this point, he might still have that guilt, you know?
Yeah.
I think, like, when we see him in A New Hope, it's kind of like he's written Vader off, like, he's a lost cause. At this point, he would still, I think, be harboring that kind of... those feelings of, like, I failed, you know, and it'd be interesting to see him maybe come to terms with Vader's gone, or the Anakin's gone. And Vader's all that remains, you know.
Uh-huh.
So I think that would be kind of cool to see.
It's fun to speculate.
It really is, and that's...
I had to narrow this list down.
I had to
narrow all of these lists down.
Yeah, yeah, me too. So next time we're going to come back, we're going to, kind of based on something we talked about in one of the last couple of episodes...
We're going to talk about just little, like, hidden Easter eggs or little tricks that directors do to either enhance a story on, like, a second viewing. I don't know how to describe it.
Visual cues.
Yeah, visual.
Things that you're not going to notice the first time.
Yeah, visual and or audio cues that happen that when you watch it, it's like, whoa, that just... Whoa, now this I love this movie even more now because of XYZ.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Cool. So we'll be back talking about that, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to The Cutting Room Floor. Please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. You can email us at thecuttingroomfloorpodcast@gmail.com.